This is Roger Marsh for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Now, before we begin this broadcast, I need to remind you that some of the content that we'll be discussing today is intended for mature audiences. So if you have little ones listening in right now, parental discretion is definitely advised. Either occupy them with something else, or you can come back to this presentation at a later time, listening on our website at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Today on Family Talk.
Over the past 20 years, hundreds of innocent believers have been senselessly murdered in their places of worship. You ever wondered what a church's responsibility is to protect congregants in this hostile and sometimes violent culture? Well, in just a moment, you're going to hear the conclusion of Dr. James Dobson's recent conversation with Mr. Carl Chin on this subject. You've tuned to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, thanking you for joining us today as we continue this discussion with Carl Chin, a church security spokesman with decades of experience in studying violence against religious institutions. Carl also founded his own organization, which is called the Faith-Based Security Network as well. Today, he'll look at the sobering statistics that he has compiled regarding violence against Christians in churches in America. Dr. Dobson will also open up about how this senseless hatred led to the death of a distant cousin of his as well. Well, there's a whole lot more content to get to, so let's get started. Here once again is Dr. James Dobson on this edition of Family Talk.
You mentioned several times yesterday about developing a plan.
That's right.
What is the plan? When you come and speak, you tell people they've got to have a plan.
Yep.
What does that mean if not carrying guns?
I break it down real easy for them. At the end of my speech, I tell them I'm going to give you three things you need to do. Number one, appoint the right people. Number two, get them the tools and the training they need. And number three, get connected with others.
Where can they get that training?
It's available at multiple places, just about any community has somebody there that does self-defense training, who does security training. Some states have a requirement for licensing to do security. But what I do tell people is be intentional about your program.
Carl, I think you know about the situation that occurred in my own family. This is very close to home for me. We're talking about something that I am passionate about, and I think people can hear it in my voice, because I had a cousin that I loved very deeply, and his son was a very gifted young man who wanted to be a minister, and he went to a seminary in Dallas, and he was designated in his class as one of the most promising, if not the most promising, student. Was going to be a pastor. It's what he wanted more than anything. This is my second cousin now, and his name was Clint Dobson. And you know about this story.
I sure do.
He was on the staff of Arlington Baptist Church, and that's a very prosperous church, a wonderful church there in Arlington, Texas. He did so well there that they set him up in an inner city church, a very small little church in a bad neighborhood, to see if he could reach out in love to the people there and introduce them to Jesus Christ. He had a secretary. There's only two members of the staff. And the neighborhood was so dangerous that they had to lock the door, because they couldn't just allow anybody to come in. There's a lot of drugs and a lot of violence going on around them. And one day they were together in that church, and the door was locked, and somebody knocked on the door. And the secretary, without thinking, went and unlocked the door and let them in. And two men came in, violent, violent men, who put a plastic bag over my cousin's head and suffocated him to death, and then beat the secretary nearly to death. She was in the hospital for weeks and weeks, and even to this day cannot remember what happened on that day. And what did they want? They wanted money from a little missionary church?
Right.
Are you kidding?
Right.
They don't have any money.
Right.
And they committed murder for nothing. I don't know where they got a few dollars, but they got virtually nothing. And then they left and they went to a fast food restaurant and they were bragging about it.
Yeah.
They were talking about what they'd done, and the waitress heard it and called the police and informed the police that there had been this incident. They came and arrested those two guys, and they were charged, and they, I suppose, are still in prison. No, they will be probably for the rest of their lives. But there's an example of it. A good young man, I think he was in his early 20s, married, lovely wife, and he wanted to serve the Lord more than anything else and was giving his life in an inner city setting, and he was senselessly suffocated.
Yes.
And
yes.
I went to the funeral that day in Arlington, Texas. And you visited that church, didn't you?
I did. There was nobody there the day I visited. I went down a few weeks after he had been killed. And I just wanted to see the church. And, you know, Doctor, it was senseless in so many ways. Just a little bit of awareness training could have stopped Miss Judy from opening that door.
Yeah, that was her name.
Yeah, Judy Elliott. And, you know,
she was horribly maimed.
Oh, my goodness. And you're right. As I understand, to this day, she still has no recollection of the attack itself or that day even. But, you know, you mentioned a while ago the research that I've done in this. And
yeah.
I started studying deadly force incidents on January 1st of 1999. And have seen many since then. I've counted over 1,700 deadly force incidents that have occurred on faith-based properties in the United States. And a deadly force incident, I have a publishing policy that I put out to media when they say, you know, what's your criteria? I've got a policy that I put out to them. But it's basically anything that has the potential or realized homicide or suicide. It's a deadly force incident, and there's been 1,700 of them in the United States. I only track United States. I don't even get out of our borders. And of those 1,700, 479 of them were actual murder events. And since many of those murder events had more than one victim, we've had over 600 murder victims. And then you add the suicides and the people who chose a church as their last stand against law enforcement. We've seen 813 violent deaths at church properties since January 1st of 1999. And of those, 60% occurred during non-event times, just like with Clint, during the week. People look at a church and they think, well, they got money. They got lots of money. Let's go in there and get it. Or various other things that cause them to go on the attack. We need our churches to be ready, to be focused on the reality that it can and does happen.
Let's take the rest of our time offering assistance to churches that take us seriously today and want to do something about it. It's not an area they were trained in. You don't
learn
that in seminary.
Nope.
The other people in the church probably don't know either. What can you tell them to help them prepare for such a tragedy as this?
Well, when I mentioned earlier getting the right people, selecting the right people to manage your team, what I mean by that is I have a—
You're talking about finding somebody with experience?
I'm talking about experience or at least desire. I mean, some churches in a small church of 100 people, they don't have the opportunity always of having law enforcement in their audience.
You're not talking about getting the youth pastor, give him a gun
I'm talking about somebody that has protection in their DNA. And I want to illustrate that by a story you may have not heard. You know, at Charleston, there were 9 people killed in Charleston, South Carolina on that Wednesday night study down in the lower level of that building, which is really ground level, but lower level of that building. One of those was Tawanza Sanders, 26-year-old young man who'd never served a day in military or law enforcement of any kind. And he was there in that prayer group, and he saw what happens to a person's head at close range with a .45 caliber pistol. He saw the killer kill his pastor in cold blood. He saw him going around the room killing other people. And Tawanza stood up in front of that killer, placed his own body between that killer and his 87-year-old Aunt Susie Jackson, who was horrified behind him. And he pleaded with that killer to stop. And he said, "Why are you doing this?" And that's when the killer said the stupid things that he did about black people, and it doesn't bear repeating. But then he killed Tawanza, shot him, and then he shot his 87-year-old Aunt Susie Jackson. And the reason we know this story is because it came up in court, because Tawanza's own mother, Felicia Sanders, was laying on the floor covering a grandchild, pretending to be dead. And she watched this exchange, and then she saw Tawanza get shot. She saw Susie Jackson get shot. And she saw Tawanza with his dying energy stroking the hand of his dying 87-year-old aunt, comforting her in her last moments.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that is a young man who had protection in his DNA. And every church has people in the audience, in the pews, somewhere, who is they're a grandfather, they're a young man, they're a grandmother, they're somebody who has the heart of a lion. And Tawanza Sanders had the heart of a lion. He didn't know it till his dying day. But he's a model of what exists, I believe, in every church. So just because you don't have law enforcement or military in your audience doesn't mean you don't find out who's got that protection in their DNA. Then get them the tools and the training they need to be able to recognize danger and to deal with it correctly.
Carl, we mentioned before that you are president of the Faith-Based Security Network. People are contacting you from all around the countries. You have materials, you have suggestions, you have training.
Yes.
What is the primary objective of that organization?
The primary objective of the Faith-Based Security Network is to bring together the security operators and their law enforcement peers across the country into a unified membership association. It's a member-owned. I have done a complete mind dump of everything that I've studied in the last 20-some years. I've given it all to this ministry. It's not the kind of thing that of our five wonderful children, you've got to have a unique passion to want to do this.
Yeah.
And it's not the kind of thing, I'm not building an estate here. I wanted to be able to pass off everything I've done to the people who really need it. And the people who really need it are those faith-based security operators. They're invested in the security and safety of people.
And they'd take a bullet for
you. They would take a bullet for any one of them, even somebody that they disagree with. They would take a bullet for any one of them. And there's so many of those people out there. They're the people like David Strongman that would break through the Philistine army just to bring a drink of water from the well. Mm-hmm. They love their ministers. They love their pastors. They love their organization. They may not show it in the same way other people do. That's the nature of a sheepdog.
Let me, as a layman in that area, express great concern for the pastors who are out there who don't believe you.
Yeah.
Please don't wait until a tragedy occurs. Yeah. I've been close to this kind of event unwittingly a number of times, and I've seen it increasing in intensity. But back in the, I believe it was the early 80s, I had a very, very good friend, Fu Kong Lee, who was a pastor. You're shaking your head. You ever hear
of
him? Fu Kong Lee was a very, very close friend of mine.
I never knew that.
He was a Chinese man. He was an associate pastor at the Chinese Baptist Church in Los Angeles. Fu Kong was a brother to me. And somebody in his church got mad, apparently at some counseling that he had been given. He was a schizophrenic. And so on a Sunday morning, he decided to take out his wrath on the pastor especially and the rest of the congregation. He had 60 bullets on his body. And during the service, in front of Fu Kong's own children who were in the choir, he walked up, killed Fu Kong, killed the pastor. and then began walking up the aisle with 60 rounds of ammunition, intending to kill people. And he had a list of those 60 that he wanted to kill. And there was an off-duty policeman sitting there, and he had his gun, and he crawled around the edge of the pew and yelled at this man. He turned around, and the policeman killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, that tragedy touched us all.
Mm-hmm.
It touched that church. I went to the funeral, and they were lined up for 2 blocks to get in there and tell his wife and family how much they loved Phu Cong and how much he loved them. He was a passionate pastor. He loved people. And to kill him was, it's a tragedy to kill anybody, but a man like that, yeah, with a family and that was a giver of Christ's love, that's all he really wanted to do. And I just grieve over him today.
Yeah. But you know, that's one of the first examples where somebody in the audience used a firearm to stop further killing. You know, it wasn't an intentional security team. It was an off-duty law enforcement
officer.
You
said yesterday you didn't want to make this political, but the gun debate in Washington has meaning for you.
You bet it does. Imagine. You bet it does.
Tell us.
I get so angry, Doctor, when I see the political hacks take an attack like Sutherland Springs or Charleston or wherever it is and start making it into a football for their agenda.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is there's no respect for the victims when you do that. And I even understand when the victim's family says, oh, it's the awful gun. I understand that hurt.
Guns do not kill people.
But it's not the gun. It's not the tool. It's the person.
Yeah.
And, you know, the statistics that I keep, yes, most of the people that are murdered by a gun. But 40% of them are murdered by other means. Your cousin Clint was a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And it boils down to this, Doctor. There are 3 things that result in a crime happening. Number 1, it's intent. Number 2 is capacity. Number 3 is opportunity. And let me explain those. If I were angry at you, but you were across the glass from me, I may have such anger that my intention would be to choke you, but I can't get in here, so I don't have the capacity. But if you've got intention and capacity and opportunity, you can commit the crime. Now, capacity is that thing that says, do they have the tool? Do they have the means to make good on this attack? That's capacity. Intention is, do they have the intention? Are they planning on this? We don't have any control over intention or capacity. We as people, you can pass all the laws you want to pass, and if they can't get a gun, they're going to get a plastic sack.
Yeah.
We don't really have control over capacity. We don't really have control over intention. We can't judge when evil enters a person's heart and they come back 4 years later mad because of an injury. We don't have control over that. We have control over the opportunity, and that's all we're doing is taking that opportunity away from these attackers.
Well, the way I feel about it, Carl, is that it's the innocent person that we want to protect.
That's right.
And they're defenseless unless there is a means to confront a killer like
this.
We really want to take away that opportunity to defend yourself?
Yeah. You know, the Mormon Church just passed an edict, or whatever they call it, where they won't allow any of their protectors to carry a firearm in their churches or whatever they call them. And you look back at the attacks that have happened in Mormon churches, the new rules they put through are nothing but political. It wouldn't have stopped one single one of the violent attacks on Mormon congregations, and there's been many of them. They didn't do one solitary thing that would have ever prevented one single one of those.
And they call it no-gun zones.
Yeah, it's a no-gun zone now, and it didn't do anything. And one of the things that I'm happy to see happening out there is Frank Pomeroy, who sat right here, is now running for the 21st District of the Senate
he's
in Texas.
He's from Sutherland Springs.
Yep, he's the Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Did a good job here.
And his heart is the same as mine. Don't make our tragedy into your political football to take our guns away. That's not what killed his daughter. And he is qualified to speak on that.
Yeah.
He lost his daughter, 5 of his 6 deacons, many of his best friends. And he recognizes it wasn't the gun.
Yeah.
It's not the tool. It's the hatred. And I believe we have a serious problem with hatred. The true hate is hatred of God.
Yeah. Frank, it's a spiritual matter.
It is. It is. Yeah. Franklin Graham wrote a great piece in 2017 called Hate What God Hates. And I have it stored on my computer. I read it once in a while. He is spot on. He is spot on. And the source of so much crime in our country is this underlying hatred of God and morality. And you mentioned Bob Vernon a while ago. Bob Vernon said something that I loved. In his book, L.A. Justice, he wrote, "When wrong is defended, when right is attacked, the pillars of social structure crumble and fall."
That's it.
He nailed it. That is the problem of the root of evil.
Our guest for these 2 days has been Carl Chen, my great friend. As we indicated last time, we've known him for many years because he used to work at Focus on the Family when I was there. And he's gone on to write this book called Evil Invades Sanctuary, The Case for Security in Faith-Based Organizations. He's a resource to you, to the pastors who've been listening and have recognized that they need to do something to protect their congregations and their church. Carl's organization, which he's president of, the Faith-Based Security Network, is one of the resources that you can reach out to. Carl, in closing, tell us how they can reach you.
The website is the best way. That's www.fbsnamerica.com. FBSN is short for Faith-Based
Security
Network.
Do you get back to people who call you?
I try to get back to everyone. I've got some of the same issues you did back in the 80s.
Well, I still do, believe it.
It's hard. It's, but yes, everybody will be contacted back. Sometimes it takes me a lot longer than
I want.
And
you have materials and you have training.
We do. Most of all, we've got a membership association where when they get in it, they're in a group of like-minded, vetted people.
Pastor, I said it before, speaking to those in our listening audience, don't live with the regret of failing to do something to protect your church. Don't come down to that moment when you are faced with the responsibility for not taking the steps that are available to you. I hope that these last 2 days will be useful in mobilizing the church, helping at least to develop a security network and a plan. That is your heart's cry, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Be intentional.
Thank you, Carl. I'm sure you've saved some people today.
Well, we'll give the glory to the Lord.
Well, what a somber topic we've been discussing over the past couple of days here on Family Talk. Churches everywhere must take necessary security precautions to protect the members of their congregations. I know many of us never thought we would ever have to deal with a subject like this, but unfortunately, this intolerant and violent culture we live in forces us to do otherwise. I'm Roger Marsh, and if you'd like to learn more about Carl Chen's organization, be sure to visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Once you're there, you'll also find a link for his book on church security. It's called Evil Invades Sanctuary. Find all of that and more when you go to drjamesdobson.org and then click onto the broadcast page. And be sure you also let us know what you thought about the past couple of broadcasts by commenting on Family Talk's Facebook page. You'll find our profile by searching for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk when you go to Facebook.com. Once you're there, leave your thoughts or comments on today's broadcast or even yesterday's broadcast post as well. We appreciate hearing how our programs are impacting you and your family. So go now to Family Talk's Facebook page and comment on either or both of the broadcast posts. We look forward to hearing from you. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Be sure to join us again Monday for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Have a great weekend.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. As we close today's program, I just want to thank so many of you out there who make this broadcast possible with your contributions. And I want to tell you how much your generosity is appreciated.